I described a person I know who's awakened as irreverent, iconoclastic, and unfiltered. And this morning the word unfiltered really felt important to talk about. Most of us have grave misperceptions about life. We don't perceive it clearly. We see through, and the Bible is called a glass darkly. Life is clouded by all of these filters. We don't start out that way. We come into the world with a kind of unknowing, a kind of deep sensitivity to what is around us. We don't yet know what it is. We don't yet have a mind judging it, interpreting it. It just comes at us. So we see these faces appearing over us. We don't even know their faces. We're just lying there. And it's all pretty wondrous as far as we can tell. The only thing we don't like is if something startles us and we go and it feels very strange and we don't like it, and we start to feel something in us that closes. We start to feel something that doesn't like something. But mostly we're in a state of what you might call awe. We just look. And for some reason, our looking is very inspiring to adults. And when they look at us, they make us smile, and we make them smile. There's this, you know, this thing that starts to happen. And the more we smile at them, the more they smile at us. And there's this reciprocity of sweetness, of joy, of connectivity. And it's really beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful things. And it's funny how a child brings that out of us so easily, and how we instill that in a child. They love us. They look at us with just like, oh. Especially mother, because mother picks them up and holds them to their breast and gives them this unbelievably sweet nourishment that fills the universe of their being, and they feel such joy in the presence of that. And that's a simple life. It's the life we all start out with, every one of us. Well, I mean, there may be some that don't, but most people have that. And then slowly stuff happens. Slowly the darkness begins, the lenses start to occur. You start to see life through like and dislike, happy, unhappy. I want, I don't want. And it's kind of the reverse of the doctor's office, where they, is it clearer? One or two, which one is clearer? This is the beginning of the darkening. We start to determine that we like to see things this way and not that way. So put on that filter. Don't look at it. Don't look at that part. We don't want that part. And then you go a little further in life and don't look at that part. And you start to look at people who make you happy, little other kids who come over and want to play with their toys, and you go, okay, I like that. then the little kids would come over and take your toy away. It's a filter. It comes down. You no longer want to play with that kind of person. Some kids love to play rough, and they find other kids who like to play rough. That filter is on. They find kids who bore them, filter down. And you keep doing these layers upon layers, even with your closest, in fact, mostly with the people who are closest with you, because you really start to feel that, and we talked about this last week, this idea of safety or protection, the sense that I don't feel safe in this situation. So you put down a filter that I won't go toward that. This is not something I can accept. And then you start to try to go only toward what you like. And sometimes in life, there's very little around that you like. There are things that are going on that are just not fun. Going to school, I don't like that. Or I love that. But it's a big filter. So suddenly, if a whole part of your day is, I don't like that, you're shutting down this self. You're making a judgment about a whole part of your life that makes it very dark and very difficult. You go to school and there are kids who are really smart and you're not smart. So what do? I don't like them. I want to go with the kids who are like me. I want to go with the kids who have my sensitivities. Or you're really brilliant and you can't stand the stupid kids because they don't get it. And so you create these unbelievable series of sort of lenses through which you look at everything. By the time you're middle-aged, or even much earlier than that, you have created a pair of very thick glasses that simply do not see the world clearly. You see what you want to see, and you don't see what you don't want to see. You really filter out the stuff that you don't like. And that filtering out of what you don't like cuts you off from a huge part of the world. You now say the world is divided into the good stuff and the bad stuff, or even could be good people and bad people, which becomes very problematic. Or people who will help you through life and people who are out to get you. So now you're really divided inside. There's a whole sense of persona that is constantly on the alert for what will bring me pleasure and what will cause me pain. And this thing is active day and night. And you live your life behind this unbelievable scrim of not seeing and not knowing, of misperceiving the world. And it's a terrible place to be, because there's no relaxation in it. There's no joy in it. There's no simplicity in it. So what do? You try to escape this confines of constriction that you feel all the time. By what? Well, first of all, you try to associate only with people who make you feel good. And in the escape of difficulty in life, you go to perhaps reading, you go to books. Books are wonderful because books put you into somebody else's head. And for approximately however many hours it is you read, you're not in your own head. You really are. You're still filtering it through that, through your own mind and then somebody else's mind, but there is a kind of sense of not me, which is a wonderful thing. You get to see life from another perspective, or you go to a movie, or you watch television. Watching television gives you stories that take you out of you for a few minutes, kind of, except you can sit there going, oh no, 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 I hope that doesn't happen, I hope that doesn't happen, which really amplifies your sense of self. Or you can watch somebody else having it happen to them, and you don't have to worry, it's not happening to me. So you can feel a little bit safe watching a movie or watching television. And you can also feel completely mindless. You can watch television and not have to worry about your own filtration system. You can really just sort of sit there and go, whoa, like that. And that feels good. It really feels good. It's your own form of noise cancellation. It's really, you know, these wonderful earphones that they have now that Bose makes that you can put on an airplane and it cancels all the background noise. Well, we all do that in life. We have our own filters to cancel background noise, television being one of them, alcohol being one, drugs being another, sex. These things cancel everything else out. And you really have, for a period of time, a filter that lets you leave you behind, and it feels great. But you wake up in the morning, all the lenses are back, and they're thick. They're really thick. And there you are, looking back at the world through all of this emotional haze, all of this intellectual haze. Everything in you is starting to feel constricted again. So, one of the things that seems to work for a lot of people in breaking this down, in unfiltering some of the lenses in front of you, is this idea of meditation. Meditation means going into a room or sitting in front of an altar or just stopping somewhere in the middle of the day and just being quiet. The first thing you realize when you do that is that you're suddenly becoming aware of all the filters. And you don't like it. Nobody likes it. To see how obstructed you are. You sit down trying to find peace, joy, and stillness, and all you find is all of these things that are preventing you from perceiving that. All of these blockages in you, these misperceptions of life. And then you have perhaps a teaching or a teacher who starts to sit with you and readjust the lenses. And for the process of a class, you sit there and you start to go, huh, it's a little bit clearer. Oh, I can see. Huh, wow, I didn't see that before. I didn't know that. You start to look at life differently. And looking at life differently starts to be attractive. It's less constricted. It's less dark. It's less obstructed. And so you go, I like this. And you sit in this meditative practice, week by week, day by day, if you can do it, altering the lens. A little bit clearer, a little bit clearer. But what's really intriguing is you start to see a lot of the issues that put those lenses into place in the first place. So here you are, you go to a meditation class and you feel, oh, I can see. Things are clearer. And then you go back outside and let's say you get a phone call from your mother. And the minute the phone rings and you see mother on the screen, you go, all the lenses just click back into place, every one of them, like you have no control. It doesn't have to be mother, it can be your boss, it can be anyone who just is part of the programming that made those filters come into play in the first place. So, what do? Well, this is called conscious work. While you are talking to your mother on the phone, you go, you change the filter, you perhaps remove the filter, and you start to have a perception of this other person as someone who no longer needs to be seen through some kind of corrective lens. You can just see that person. And what do you see when you see that person? It's really interesting. You see someone who was just like you, who, at one point, was a little baby in a crib, going like that. And then what happened to them is the same thing that happened to you. They put these lenses on. So they're seeing you through the same set of lenses that you're seeing them through. And you're looking at this person and you're going, oh, they're as blind as I am. They have the same problems. They're the same misperceiving entity. So you try, now that you see things a little more clearly, to say to them, I get it. I get you. I understand why you see me this way. I understand why you are in pain. I understand why you cause me these problems. They may not want to hear that, And what happens sometimes is the minute you say that to somebody, they start to get more and more defensive, and it really cuts you off even more. But it's really now their problem, not your problem, because you have changed the lens. What you feel when you change the lens is more open, more directly aware of another human being, more allowing, more forgiving, more accepting, because you get why they are what they are. This thing in you that's called judgment or emotion or protective ego self starts to, in its clarity, be less and less present. And ultimately, you can start removing some of these lenses altogether, and you just see the world as it is. It's very much like being a little baby. You start going, it's incredibly beautiful. But it's also very threatening, if you will, to the vestiges of ego. A lot of these lenses are ideas about what life is. They're put on you very early on. Life is suffering. Life is about good and evil. Life is about being a good person or a bad person. All of these things start to play on you. And when you start to remove some of these lenses, they're not removing concepts, they're removing identity itself. Let's say you've been taught through life to be a conservative Republican, to see life that way, or a liberal Democrat. And now this filter is being taken out. How do you see the world if you're not seeing it as someone who is totally compassionate or totally identified with nation, state, father, parent? What happens when that defining aspect of you is taken away? It's interesting. What happens is you arrive at a place of not knowing. Maybe this is right, maybe that's right. Maybe neither are right, maybe both are right. They're gone. And you're no longer seeing through the lens of right and wrong, politically correct, politically incorrect. You're not seeing any of that. You become very irreverent. You're suddenly just seeing it as it's seen through these eyes. But when all of these lenses start to lift off, what's left? Ego, mind, the interpreter of life, is gone. I mean, it's a slow process at first. You know, meditation is fix this lens, correct that lens, clearer, clearer, clearer. And then there's often like one lens left. You don't know it. You don't know that, but then it goes, it's gone. These eyes are still here. The ears are still here. You're still here. But all the interpretive self is gone. Everything that judges it is gone. There's a residue of it. There's a memory of all that stuff. There's a memory you were once a Republican or a Democrat, but you're not identified by that anymore. There's a sense that you were once a very magnanimous person or a very sort of skinflint-like person, but that it's not there anymore. You're just this. And that really seems like, for some people, it did for me when it first occurred, like the end of the spiritual path. Ah, I have arrived at no filter. Just this, just this. Whatever is looking out from this is its own truth. It's seeing, 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 seeing itself in a way. But what's so extraordinary is that this is no in no way the end. Because it's still here. It's still operating. It still seems to have function in the world. And what is that function? Well, in a sense, that's something that this is now learning. It's learning. But it feels a lot like everything Rudy taught. It's called work. What do you do with awareness? What do you do with love? What do you do with compassion? What do you do with clear seeing? What do you do with this thing of wanting to just be of help? Wanting to tell other people, you're not all these lenses. You're not what you think you are. This thing you're seeing through is your own limitation. It's stuff you have put in place for very good reasons over the course of a lifetime. There's no blame. There's no fault. You're not the bad person for having put those lenses on. That's how it works. But now the process is undoing them. You don't even have to do that if you don't want to. You can live this a life of seeing things through a glass darkly, or you can live a life of seeing clearly. It's completely up to you. But for this presence, it seems to want to announce to you that you can change that and that there is a way to do it. It's not all that hard. It's just practicing being unfiltered. You practice it, you know, as much of the daytime as you can, much of the nighttime as you can. You just sit and look and be still and watch what it's like to not be judgmental, to not be critical, to not be wanting something over something else, to just accept it exactly as it appears. That's what it feels like, totally not in charge. It's just happening. And it's pretty wonderful. It's not always wonderful. There are times where what's arising inside is complicated, difficult, maybe painful. But what you know when you experience that is that it's not you that it's relating to. It's just happening. There's no you that has to judge it. There's no you that has to say, oh, this is terrible, and what did I do wrong, and oh, how can I change it? You just go, huh, this is happening. And that's all. You come to a place of extraordinary unknowing. You simply don't know the answers as a judgmental, intellectual, observant person. The answers that you do know are the answers that the self knows. The self knows itself. And so the questions and answers arise the questions arise and the answers come simultaneously. It just keeps coming. Everything arises in a kind of clarity. It's like you can look into the depth of the lake and see the bottom. There's an enormous sense of intuitive knowing, of authority. Not something that's interpreted by intellectual mind, is just something that's very simply expressed. It's not arrogant on any level. It's just, You know, Rudy was not the most well-spoken person or the most brilliant person. He always said, you know, he had this way of talking that from Brooklyn, you automatically make, in your mind, you say, this person can't know anything because they don't speak English. You know, but Rudy spoke a kind of simple truth all the time. And there was nothing in your mind that could really fight it, because it was like, aha. And the people I'm meeting who are awakened seem to be doing exactly the same thing. They just speak this thing that you go, Or they speak it with so much velocity, if you will, that you can't in any way grasp it, which is okay, because it's not the thing they're saying that's important. It's the expression itself. It's the energy itself. The energy of clarity and of knowing, this irreverent, iconoclastic, unfiltered energy, which is enormous. It's an extraordinary thing to be in the presence of, because it washes through your system and it readjusts your vision. It readjusts the lenses and ultimately makes it so you don't have to wear corrective lenses at all. Like that. Unfortunately, I still have to do this, but that's the limitation. that goes on here. And you know, the truth is, it doesn't matter. That's the great truth. It doesn't matter. You are what you are. You are the very thing you are. You are the people in your life, that you are the circumstances that occur. You are everything that is going on that you know. That's all you are. That's all you can know. And you can know it in a way that is very simple, allowing, forgiving, open, and compassionate. Or you can know it as a kind of, oh God, and struggle and hatred of what's going on. That's really the choice that we all have. It's the same world. It's the same thing. It's just being seen differently, perceived or misperceived. And when you truly perceive the world as it is, and you stop fighting it and interpreting it, you awaken to this. To this. Whatever this is. And you won't know what this is, because nothing in you is going to try to figure it out. You won't know it through some process. You won't know it through some judgment. You will just know it because it is. And because it's you. This is you. This is all you are. This. It's a pretty simple statement, ultimately. There is nothing but this. And this will keep changing, and you will keep changing with it, because that's what happens. It just is what it is, moment to moment to moment to moment, and there does seem to be some kind of movement in it. But when you get very quiet inside, there's no movement at all. It moves, stuff moves, but you don't move at all. You're just... you are seeing, hearing, knowing. And it's sort of what spiritual work is about. Because this thing that sees, knows, hears, feels doesn't appear to be all that material. Although it appears for moments to be very materialized, it dematerializes very quickly into that. And that's us. That is us. The unknowing, unfiltered presence. And there's no other real way to describe it. Some people call it the absolute. Oneness. Thousands of names. But none of them matter. Because in the end, you don't have anything to give it a name. You just are it. And everyone you look at is as equally it as you are. Everyone is equally it. So the only way you can respond to the other, including to the people you can't stand, is to honor that they are it. They are exactly what you are. No higher and no lower. They can be president, king, head of the world, and they can be a little kid crawling around in the desert somewhere, and they are equal, completely equal. And it goes beyond that, into every little insect, into every microbe, everything equal. So this sense of feeling better than or lesser than kind of goes away, because you are one with it all. And the deepest perception sees that. The totally unfiltered vision sees that. It looks at a chair and sees God. It looks at a flower. It looks at another person. It looks at the carpet, the wall. It doesn't matter. It's living presence. It is that. You are that. Arriving at that is what practice is about. That's what your spiritual life is about. Arriving at that. And of course, it's very easy to say this. You are already that. The only thing that separates you from that is you don't see it. You misperceive it. You see it through the filters. And if you could just instantly remove those filters, you would see it. But if I were to remove the filters of your eyes right at this moment of your being, you would think you were going crazy. If I were to rip out the Republican Democrat part of you, and everything you ever believed about yourself was gone in a second, you would not know who you were, where to stand on, what life was about. You would have no idea what this was about. You would be so lost and so confused, you would say, give it back. Give me back my Republicanism. Give me back my Democratism. Give me back this stuff so I can know who I am. So it's nicer, I think, to take away a little bit at a time through this practice, so that when the last filter is gone, it's like, oh, rather than this unbelievably terrifying thing of having no sense of who you are. Even though that works, a lot of people get it that way. But it can also be very slow, very easy, very organic. Rudy called it like becoming a ripe fruit. When you're ripe, you fall off the tree. That's all it is. A ripe fruit is ready. It's got the weight, it's got the sugar, it's got the juice, it's got the substance. It's ready to be free of that tree. Boom. But we are all working in that direction. The great thing about being around people whose lenses are removed, whose lenses have been taken away, is that they can kind of alert you to or remind you of the fact that you too can see that way. And that whenever you see through anger, whenever you see through frustration, whenever you see through resistance and obstacle and tension, you're seeing through a filter. Because when the filters are gone, there's no obstacle, there's no resistance, there's no tension, there just is. And you just move on. That's what we're all trying to do. So if nothing else, if you take nothing else away from this talk right now, just know that when any of these issues arise inside you, they are misperceived, filtered versions of a life that doesn't need to be seen that way. It doesn't have to be looked at through your eyes. You can change those eyes into the eyes of the all-seeing, the all-knowing, the all-loving, the all-compassionate self that you really are. So, any questions?
When you take away all those lenses and you're open like that, is there room for discernment? Or
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not your discernment.
Okay.
There's a knowing. There's a knowing that is unbelievably clear and pure, from which all of our higher instincts derive. Everything that we know to be what we call good comes from a place of innate goodness that is somehow at the core of all this. Or people say God is love. That's what you feel. There is a loving force that runs this. And when you remove all of your fear and all of your distraction and all of your tension, what you discover is that you are a ball of love. Feeling ball of love, who can feel pain for others, who can experience the suffering of others, but it's not your own. It's this global, extraordinarily beautiful presence that knows it all. It's really what we are. You don't lose your higher nature. Your higher nature is reflective of what happens when about half of your filters are gone. Higher nature is what you see, it's what you are. And it just leads you to itself. And as you're led to it by light and joy and love. That's what you see more and more and more. And in the early days, you run away from that. But as you start to really, as you start to really, really feel the self inside, person that embodies it for a long time, the person is the person you always wanted to be. It's who you are. And then it becomes less about a person, less about you. There's no need to own it. There's no need to be identified with it or have people identify you as part of it. Why? It doesn't matter. It's really not you. And when I'm with these guys, these awakened guys, I know that when I talk to them, I'm talking to myself. I'm not talking to them. Because there's nobody there who's analyzing, rejecting, thinking about, or considering what I'm saying. They're just direct perception. And that's what happens. You just become that. And there's no loss in it. There's only gain. The only loss is this false sense of misperception. And it's not a bad thing to lose. Because when you start to see clearly, it's just like when you go to the optometrist's office. You know, is this better, is this worse? One or two, you know. You get to the place where you see it without having to have look through a haze or through an unfocused and blurry sort of world. It's not like that anymore. That's all. That's what it is. A lot of people think it's scary. You know, I had someone I talked to last week was saying, I don't want to lose myself. I love who I am. I love what I am. Well, that's fine. But it's like saying, I love not seeing the world clearly. I really enjoy it. I love the distortions. That's fine. I mean, really, it's fine. If you want to love the distortions, love the distortions. If that's how you function, no one's telling you that that's really wrong. I'm just telling you that you can get rid of them. And sometimes those distortions are not pleasurable. And that person I'm referring to has approached me at times with, get me out of here. I can't stand this. So the one of the last things that the ego does before it's really willing to let go and really see things clearly, after it starts throwing all the fear at you, it does the opposite. It says, oh, I love my life. It's so perfect. I don't want to change. I don't want to lose anything. Well, trust me, when that thing goes, then it's not, there's no drama about it. There's no extolling anything. It just is what it is. And what it is so beautiful and so simple. There's nothing to say. You don't have to announce that I don't want to lose this, because you are it forever. You're just it. Anyone else?
The camera shut down.
It did?
Just now.
Well, how perfect. How perfect. One thing I wanted to say about in meditating in the class situation, the teacher in a sense is a broadcasting element, and everyone in the room becomes receptors for that, and it becomes a kind of taking on of energies and an allowing of these energies to move through you and to clarify and to open channels. There are times for people who, as they begin to teach, to become broadcasters of this energy. But if in the class this starts to happen for you, it's a kind of a like turning on another radio in the room. So you have two radios working at the same time, and that just it complicates the environment. So I just tell people not to do that. It doesn't mean that it isn't natural for you, and even when you're at home meditating, if mudra things of this nature happen, that's fine. You know, if that's how it's working for you, it's what it should be. But in this room, I just have to ask people to sit still, because otherwise it gets complicated for everybody else. Okay? Okay, thank you guys for coming. Class next week as well. I don't know, it's probably be a small class again, but my feeling is always that the numbers are insignificant. What's important is the connectivity, and I really appreciate that you guys made the effort to be here.